Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Deep Dive Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Connor Orr. We have a week nine. Yeah.
God, we're almost there.
Yeah, it's pretty much over. Whatever the standings are now is how it will finish at the end of the year. I don't know if we even want to break down these games. Just get ready for the 49ers-Patriots Super Bowl.
It is a bad... It's a bad week of football.
The schedule is not great. However, we do have a great Sunday night game. And look, it should mention real quick, if Mahomes was playing and he had Vikings-Chiefs, that would be a lot more appetizing.
True. That's true. Yeah.
Everything else is kind of eh. But the Sunday nighter is great. The Sunday nighter is legit great. That will be the Ravens and the Patriots. And that's what we're going to talk about up top here before we sort of rapid fire the rest of the slate here. So here we go. My favorite factoid is that this will be the fifth of the five 2018 first-round quarterbacks that the Patriots have faced this season. They've done all of them. They've checked all the boxes.
Good for them. What a fortuitous, yeah. What a fortuitous turn. I mean, this is arguably the best quarterback. I don't even know if there's much of an argument anymore. This is the best quarterback that they've faced out of that group. I mean, Lamar Jackson's the only one that's been able to sustain any success.
I know. I mean, this really is the... And look, plenty of time to change over the years. We'll see how things go, if things turn around for Baker, if Josh Allen gets a better grasp of what they're trying to do there. But yeah, Lamar is the guy right now. And look, Lamar has made huge strides as a passer, but what is giving defenses fits? And you saw it last time they were out there when they really took it to Seattle a couple weeks ago, is the not only the design stuff, but the scramble yards. He's leading the league in scramble yards here, and they are just coming at huge moments, it seems like. He's got 262 on the year, and I pulled that off an ESPN article, if you're wondering. Let's give credit where credit's due. 262 on the year. They're coming at huge times, and I do want to highlight one play from that Seahawks game a couple weeks ago. The Seahawks were doing some spying on Jackson with Bobby Wagner, which... makes sense. Bobby Wagner, very athletic linebacker. That's a good matchup for the Seahawks, you would think. The Ravens basically sent Gus Edwards out for... it ended up being a big scramble play. Gus Edwards, instead of being a check-down receiver, basically ran straight out and just blocked a spying Bobby Wagner to spring Lamar Jackson for a huge chunk of yardage on a scramble. And it was just kind of a... it was a really good idea, and it was really neat to see it, and I guess they've shown it now, and now the Patriots get to figure out how they are going to counter that.
Yeah, I think when you talk to coaches about the whole revolution with the movement quarterback, right, was that it changes the numbers, right? So now it's no longer that the defense has a one-person advantage. The quarterback can block a defender simply by the way he moves or looks his eyes at the line of scrimmage. But what the Ravens are doing is they're building on that theory, and they're sort of accentuating the fact that, like, Lamar Jackson is a great quarterback, yes, but he's also, like, positionless in a sense. Like, on a given snap, he can be anything, and now we have a very good offensive line, we have very good blocking backs, and so we can totally take advantage of almost anything you're trying to do up front. And what I think is interesting about this New England game is the book on the Patriots has been, if you're going to beat them, you're going to have to run the ball this year. Every team that has sustained even a little bit of success against New England, it's been on the ground. Freddie Kitchens said it last week, where we tried to run the ball. They were forcing the ball to Nick Chubb in the third quarter when they were down 17 points because it was the only thing that was working. And so this is kind of their biggest weakness, if you can call it a weakness, against a humongous strength for Baltimore.
I was going to say, the Patriots, they just don't need a whole lot of help in the box to stop the run here. And that's what they've, you know, we all rightly worry about pass rush skills when it comes to defensive linemen and stuff like that. I mean, the Patriots just collect these guys. Lawrence Guy is a perfect example.
Literally a guy.
And this is his revenge game here against the team that employed him for the first part of his career. But I mean, he made a couple of game changing plays in the Cleveland win. But more than that, he's just you can't move him. They just have those guys up front that you just can't run on that defensive line, and it's almost like you don't really have to bring an extra guy into the box and change the numbers there. You know, not to mention when you have a guy like Hightower and guys like Van Noy who are so sturdy as well. But it's gonna be fun because you just kind of wonder what the Patriots are going to do schematically here. I think obviously they will spy Jackson when they play Josh Allen. They spied Allen with Jamie Collins a lot. But do you need almost like a safety for your spy at this point?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, when you brought up the fact that the Seahawks used the spy on Jackson with Bobby Wagner, I'm like, there's five guys on that Patriots defense that I could feel comfortable putting in that role, relatively comfortable, right? There's a few linebackers. I mean, you mentioned Van Noy. Their secondary is just full of, replaceable parts and in a good way, right? Guys that can kind of lean between man and zone coverage. They can come up and play in the box. And so I'll be interested to see because I think they're good enough that they could probably mix up the spies, so it's a little bit harder to identify pre-snap, too, so that Baltimore doesn't get any sort of comfort. They can't run as many of those plays where they take a guy out like that. And I think that's what's crazy about New England's defense now is they're so good and so used to each other and so on the same page that it's going to be something that Baltimore has never seen before and maybe the blueprint to stop them for the rest of the season.
Yeah, so we have, in the Super Bowl, they moved Jonathan Jones to safety to get a little more coverage ability on the back end there. You wonder if they play around with that. I guess when it boils right down to it, they're so good in man coverage. And that's, I mean, that's kind of why they're as good as they are on the back end, because in the end, they're really good at man coverage. But how often do you want to turn your back to Lamar Jackson with this defense? And I guess if you keep the guys in the middle sort of with their eyes on him, then you have some finding some mix of that, of sort of man outside the numbers, zone in the middle of the field is probably what makes the most sense at this point.
I'm going to say one thing that I think is going to make some sense, and then one thing that I think is sounds totally insane. The thing that I think makes some sense is the only X factor here is the fact that you brought it up, right? Lamar Jackson's scramble yards, but these aren't typical quarterback scramble yards. Like if you look at some of the games that they've won, he is turning, and this is going to sound cliche, but is turning absolutely nothing into 14 or 15 yards, but mm-hmm. by today's NFL standards, not by 2000 NFL standards when coaches would completely ignore the idea that a quarterback would leave the pocket. I'm talking about there's plans for him. He's contained all the way to the sideline, and he still finds that space to get back out into the middle of the field where he's so dangerous. And, I think that's what's really interesting. And the insane thing that I'm going to say is if I'm the Patriots, I lose this game on purpose, right? Because... they're in your division. You have the pieces to beat them. You don't want to give everybody else the answer to the test. And so you use this, if you're Bill Belichick, to get rid of the 16-0 talk that's going to bother your guys anyway. And you keep that Lamar Jackson game plan bottled up deep inside. You let them make it to the conference championship game, and then you blow them out.
The only thing I'll say, this is 19-0. That's Belichick's white whale. Mm. This is his last chance because Tom Brady's obviously going to go play quarterback for the Rough Riders, Saskatchewan Rough Riders next year, something like that. I don't know. When I think back to the quarterbacks who have the most success against the Patriots, it tends to be guys who do the second reaction stuff. Obviously, Mahomes has success against anyone, but he's kind of scheme proof, and I think Deshaun Watson falls into that as well. Deshaun Watson, who is not quite the athlete that Lamar is, but he just has such a great sense of mapping everything when he's on the move. Russell Wilson's a guy who's had some success against these Belichick defenses. It's the guys who can not only, it's one thing to be athletic as a quarterback, and another thing just to be able to create as you use that athleticism. I think Lamar is trending in that direction. I think it'll be a really interesting, just sort of a good gauge of where he is at this point in his career to see what he can do sort of on the fly to create against this defense here.
Yeah, I mean, if they land within 10 points of the Patriots and it's a relatively competitive game, given that this defense is on pace for a historic conclusion to the 2019 season, I would put that as a huge win for Lamar Jackson. I think that's totally in line with the progress that we've seen so far. And I mean, nobody else has come close to this defense this year. And, you know, Jenny and I were talking about this on our podcast the other day. I mean, we don't even know who's calling the defense. That's how amazing it is. Like, not only do we not know how to stop it, we don't even know who's calling it. There's the CBS had a three-way split screen on the other day with three people on the headset, and all could have been a possibility.
Yep. And in reality, they're all just conversing amongst themselves, and I don't know.
Ernie Adams is calling
Kyle
it from the booth.
Kyle Van Noy is just calling it on the fly or something. this will be worth the time on Sunday night, which is nice because we haven't had a lot of great primetime games this year. Last week was good. Chiefs-Packers was good, but
Chiefs-Packers was good because Matt Moore made it good. You know, Matt Moore came from nowhere. And he dueled it out. I can't do another bad primetime game. You know, we need like a Brady Mahomes one kind of Sunday night football game. We haven't had that yet.
I mean, this is it. I guess the nice thing is, well, it's not nice if you're a Patriots fan, but I mean, this New England offense, Tom Brady is right. They don't have an identity right now. They haven't found their identity. I mean, and I don't know what that identity is going to be. I mean, they can do the, you know, sort of elements of the power run thing, but it's just not the same without James Devlin. And then, you know, they're still, do they have plans for Mohamed Sanu, or do they just sort of pick up a guy who they think is just kind of a good, reliable player out there? They have work to do. And I mean, granted, they have 8 weeks to do it. But I don't know if this offense is going to go out there and put up 30-something points on the Ravens and make this one a snoozer.
No, I think it's going to be exciting, but it's going to be like a 20-17 kind of deal. I think, you know, it's definitely the understanding of a lot of people that the Patriots are trying to double down on the wide receiver thing during the trade deadline, and for whatever reason it just didn't work out. I'm still shocked that you know, given how much Belichick loved Emmanuel Sanders, that they weren't able to make that work. You know, I think he still probably would have been interested in a guy like that. But yeah, they're just sort of, this offense is so ho-hum right now, which is just not what you'd ever expect from New England. It's really interesting that, you know, they're not going to be able to score, you know, they're not going to be able to outscore Baltimore, simply, you know. So it's going to be, I don't know, it's going to be good. It's going to be a good, like, 2000s style football game, but with new offenses, if that makes sense.
I like it. The early Belichick, the early aughts Patriots,
yeah,
those teams. That's what this feels like more and more. Yeah, two undefeated teams, and neither quarterback is an MVP candidate. Pretty wild.
And they're both, like, just historically great
so
defenses.
Handsome. Yeah. Let's rapid fire the rest of the Week 9 slate here, and we're going to start in London, England. The Texans Jaguars and Connor, I'll let you do the honors, but I think our favorite part of this is the fact that Doug Marrone worked diarrhea into his assessment of this matchup.
So I saw it like fly by on Twitter that he said that Doug Marrone has a secret to handling the London games, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. But really, the secret was that he just didn't like to tell anyone that he said that, here's the quote: "I've got this secret I don't tell anyone, but I think it's awful for people who haven't done it before. You feel bad, you want to throw up, you have diarrhea." Is what Doug Marrone said. You have diarrhea when you go to London. So I don't know if that's inconclusive. Does he have a secret to handling it now? Or is the secret that he didn't want to tell anybody that he has diarrhea when he gets to London?
Yeah, it's
a great mystery.
I think the latter. Jaguars looked good last week. They got some, you know, I don't know about that Greg Williams defense with the Jets, but the Jets clearly had things they wanted to do to the Jaguars, and the Jaguars had counters ready to everything. This Houston defense, I worry about. It keeps me up at night. No J.J. Watt, obviously. And, you know, they brought in Gary and Conley. And granted, it was going to take Gary and Conley some time to adjust to what they do in Houston. They do a lot of those cover four looks that sort of takes a lot of chemistry on the back end. But, you know, they had a blown coverage against the Raiders last week that really almost cost him the game. I worry about sort of a drained pass rush and a back end that just isn't looking very good right now.
Yeah, Conley had that one, the one good play, you know, down the stretch where he kind of swatted that ball away from Tyrell Williams, I think it was. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, God, what a weird season for the Texans to decide that this is the one that we're going all in for, you know? Really, you're depending so much on someone like Gary and Conley. And this is a game that they can lose. I mean, I don't think by any stretch of the imagination Deshaun Watson's eye is flaring up again. I mean, he got kicked in the face. This poor guy is taking buses to games, and he can't see right now, and he's still going to be thrown out there. And Gardner Minshew's playing well. I mean, he's going to throw deep, and the Texans aren't going to be able to do what they want up front. The back end of that cover four defense is going to be tested, and you know, I don't know, I'm interested. I think a couple weeks ago I like doubled down on one of these podcasts that the Jaguars were going to remain in the playoff hunt, and I think I'm going to double down. I think it's going to be an interesting game.
I like that because the AFC is so wide open, and I have been just on the verge of writing off the Jaguars all year, and I probably have to back off now. This is something I was all about the Jets making a late run here.
We are not safe from a like critical Thursday night like Tannehill Minshew face off. We're not safe from that. It's gonna happen.
Oh man. And by the way, the Hasbro folks have to make one of those operation boards where it's like Deshaun Watson, and that's a moneymaker right there if you can get his rights.
I can't believe that if you're Houston, you saw exactly what the treatment of your quarterback, your young quarterback, how that plays out with the team like in your division within Indianapolis. We're like, yeah, let's just keep throwing him in. He won't get sad or tired or walk out on us before a season or anything like that. You know, I it's unbelievable. And Deshaun Watson, to his credit, just keeps evolving and keeps playing better. I mean, that the Michael Jordan comp that Gruden made the other day was so hacky. But at the same time, I mean, it's a player that, you know, I think this is not what John Gruden meant, but the player that understands the team around him and continues to evolve in that fashion, that's what he's doing. I mean, I think that he's really flying under the radar in terms of guys who have had really good seasons this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I wish someone should show him some of the old Eli Manning tape about how to sort of protect yourself.
Yeah.
Like, defenders get near you, just go down. You don't have to do it every time. Just like, I don't know, every third time. Just like... Just like protect yourself and take the sack.
It's all about business decisions, you know, except, and this is kind of unrelative, but did you notice last week on Sunday Night Football that Aaron Rodgers was like scrambling to the sideline? And you know that part where all the defenders give up because they don't want to hit the guy too close to the sideline? You know, and it's sort of that understood moment where everybody backs off. Rodgers like stopped there and let everyone go by him and then started running back towards the middle of the field. And I was thinking to myself, this is going to open up a Pandora's box that quarterbacks do not want open, because now people are going to make sure you're out of bounds and they're just going to take the penalty. And poor guys like Deshaun Watson or anybody else that's going to scramble for their living, at least partially, is I would be mad at Aaron Rodgers right now if I
it's
saw that.
And it was at the end of the first half. I know exactly the play you're talking about. And it's the late slide, I feel like, is becoming a thing too. The almost like slide into the guy and almost it's almost like you're headbutting the defender and then calling for a flag. I feel like that's becoming a thing.
Yeah, we're just on the verge of like defenses being so angry about the current state of play that we're just gonna have an entire like rage session on the field one of these days.
Let's go to Washington goes to Buffalo. Look, The Bills kind
what
of caught the Eagles
about this
at
game,
the.
Really?
I was the Bills kind of caught the Eagles at the last. At the wrong time last week. The Eagles were sort of just getting healthy again in the secondary, but I just kind of wonder. I mean, Washington's been so banged up on the back end with their cornerbacks. Josh Norman's been running real hot and cold this year. I feel like this is a game where Josh Allen can get a couple of downfield shots here, and they just haven't really been they haven't been materializing this season. I think it's a chance to some of a get right game for the Bills quarterback.
Yeah, I think they desperately need that put all the confidence on me game. You know, and at the risk of winding up like the Jaguars in the playoffs, where you don't try it enough during the season and then you don't know if it can actually happen when it matters, right? And, you know, I think that he has the ability to do it. I think we've seen him get slowly better, but yeah, I think this is definitely the right time. They're facing a dejected, horrible franchise with no direction, and you know, allowing Josh Allen to put up 500 yards I think would be a nice little confidence booster for everybody.
Yeah, it's also Trent Williams back in the most literal sense, in that he's on the roster. We don't expect him to play in this game or probably at all in 2019.
What's the mechanics behind that? Is that like when you end your holdout, is it, can you just kind of pull a Michael Scott and just declare an end to the holdout, and then you just show up and you wave and then you say, okay, but I'm also not coming. But I want you to know that the holdout is over, but I'm not going to do anything else.
Yeah. I mean, he has to accrue the season, which I think he had until week 10 to do that, to report and sort of just be officially on the roster. But that's a really good question. I mean, can you just sort of blue flu Jalen Ramsey the thing from here on in? Because it sounds like that's what he's going to do.
I have long argued that what an amazing thing that would be, you know, because you still get all the good cafeteria. I don't know if the Red Washington has a good cafeteria or not, but you still get all the good cafeteria food. You get to wear you get a brand new pair of sweatpants every day. You just kind of hang out with your friends outside. I would love that. I think
all
that'd
the sweatpants you want. Be beautiful. Titans, Panthers, still Kyle Allen. I thought it was going to be Cam this week. I assume at this point that means Cam is not healthy enough to go, because I don't know, Connor. I don't know about Kyle Allen. I think he's a fine backup. I think you kind of saw all of the drawbacks of Kyle Allen last week, and you know, he's the kind of quarterback you can win games if the other team's going to give it to you seven times on turnovers and that sort of thing. But this is another tough one for him. Really good back end on that Titans defense. And Cameron Wake is all of a sudden playing like, well, it's like 37-year-old Cameron Wake playing like he's, you know, like 35-year-old Cameron Wake, which was like 27-year-old Cameron Wake.
Yeah, no, it's been really incredible. I will say that I'm amazed that Christian McCaffrey is still standing. I mean, he has literally carried this team. I think he had like, 80% of their total yards or something last week in that game.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to correct me on that, which is fine. But yeah, the Kyle Allen experience was a microcosm of every rise and fall of every marginally good backup quarterback in the league, where it was like, oh, where'd this guy come from? Wow. And then, oh, I get it. That's why. You know, that's why he's not a starting quarterback. And so, yeah, I don't know what is going to happen in Carolina right now. I mean, you've reached the end of this as a feasibility. So it's either you risk Cam Newton and try to squeeze the remaining toothpaste out of that tube, and then with the understanding that you're going to reset everything in the draft anyway, or I don't know. I mean, I guess you just keep going and you hope that you get a fully healthy Cam Newton next year.
Yeah. Vikings Chiefs, obviously Matt Moore again, and as we saw, Matt Moore can keep that offense running on time for the most part, and they had some neat designs for him too last week. But I'm mostly looking at Kirk Cousins here, and this is just a chance for Kirk Cousins to keep rolling after the panic of the two bad games early on. He's just feasting on average and below average defenses.
It's incredible. I mean, you know, somebody said, sort of tongue-in-cheek that he was in the MVP discussion, but I think if Minnesota keeps winning, I think that's a legitimate claim. I mean, he's playing really well. He's accentuating his wide receivers. I mean, you know, he didn't throw any touchdowns last week, but still 23 of 26. He completed almost 90% of his passes. He hasn't had a passer rating below 100 since September, week four. I mean, this is just a really incredible stretch by him, and I think they're finally just allowing the offense to breathe and do what it's supposed to do. Dalvin Cook is obviously a big part of that, but at the same time, a lot of this is the best of Kirk Cousins that you got in Washington, the reason that you made this deal in the first place.
I mean, if you had spaced out those games, it was at Chicago and at Green Bay, which a lot of quarterbacks are going to look bad at Chicago and at Green Bay. If one was in week two and one was in like week 11, it would be a different conversation around Kirk Cousins. Because, I mean, look, 9.29 yards per attempt. And I hate getting obsessed with just the numbers, but 9.29 yards per attempt is MVP caliber. Yeah. Patrick Mahomes was 8.79 last year. And yes, as I said earlier, he's facing a lot of sort of C and D defenses during the stretch, but you kind of can't argue with that kind of production.
No, and especially, I mean, think about where we started. He was 8 for 10 the first week of the NFL season. I mean, that's phenomenal that the Vikings offense has evolved to this point. And maybe part of that was the plan. I mean, we all know that Mike Zimmer is an established the run fiend. He will fire you if you don't agree to do that. He'll fire you in the middle of the season. Doesn't matter. It's almost a case that he got what he wanted first. You know, he got kind of a look at the offense that he thought he could have, and then when you slowly introduce some of this stuff back into the fold, it's like, okay, yeah, passing is good. We can do that too.
Jets Dolphins. This is where it starts. This is where the Jets postseason run begins. Look, I have been really optimistic about the Jets and this midseason stretch where it just becomes an almost laughably easy schedule, but they looked so bad in Jacksonville last week outside of the opening drive. That offensive line is a mess. They were out-schemed against New England and sort of confused, and then they were just flat out overwhelmed by the talent against Jacksonville. On top of that Greg Williams defense is just, I mean, it was just a complete embarrassment schematically what the Jaguars did to them last week. So all that said, Miami twice, home against the Giants, home against the Raiders, at Washington, at Cincinnati. This is quite a six-game stretch coming up where the Jets can sort of climb back to respectability, I think.
Yeah, when Darnold came back from mono, you know, I think, I wrote that a couple weeks ago, is that this is still going to be a fun time to be a Jets fan, relatively, right? You're going to be able to see your quarterback play well towards the end of the season, and whether that leads the franchise to make decisions like Cleveland made with Baker Mayfield, and you load up and you think that he's going to play better, or if you take a more measured approach and understand that you're playing the Dolphins twice and the Giants and all these really bad teams, whatever. I just still think that we're going to see the best of Sam Darnold at some point in these games, and that's going to be really valuable for the Jets, right? We're going to see the top end of his ability in his athletic prime because the opponents are so bad.
Yeah. Yep.
Maybe that's why you hung on to some of those guys too. I mean, Robbie Anderson was on the trade block. You could have gotten rid of some of those players. I think everyone's saying that they could have traded Le'Veon Bell is crazy, but I think Le'Veon Bell's playing good too. So
I was gonna say Le'Veon Bell's been good this year. I know people look at the yards per attempt and get all discouraged, but that's your yards per attempt when you're a good runner who is immediately engulfed by defenders as soon as you touch the ball 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage. I think he's been good this year, and the offensive line, like we see with so many teams, the offensive line just limits what you can do schematically because you can't block the other team.
Yeah, that's the Jets and Cleveland, blocking is just one of those things you think they'd think of before the season started.
Yeah. Know? Yeah. They should write it on a whiteboard and circle it and remember it next offseason. Bears-Eagles, I'm all about the Bears just going to the two-minute drill for an entire game, because this cannot go any worse with Mitchell Trubisky. And the one thing I'm curious about is, look, there's not some like clutch gene that is allowing him to play well on the final drive of games after failing for 58 minutes. I think it has a lot to do with the fact that when you're forced to play fast, you're thinking less and you're just reacting out there. And I think that's what Trubisky has to do at this point. So just go out there and just run hurry up nonstop.
Yeah, Matt Nagy, you know, having covered several failed franchise quarterbacks as a Daily Beat writer, there is definitely a groove that Matt Nagy is falling into with Trubisky, and right now he's making better throws than you think phase, where he's trying to convince people that a lot of the misses aren't Mitch Trubisky's fault, which is like two things away from I'm trading for somebody else.
Yeah,
because we need help. But it's interesting. I mean, somebody brought this up to me the other day. If you were the Bears and you got a great offer, deal on Andy Dalton, would you take it?
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
I would. I wonder about Matt Nagy and his ability to teach based on what's going on with Trubisky, but his ability to scheme is excellent.
Yeah.
I mean, they have open receivers constantly in that offense. So if you had someone who could just run it properly, even if they're not super talented, I think you'd have a pretty solid offense there.
Nagy's is making Mitch Trubisky watch missed throws all over and over again, like he did the missed kick, and just not working. You know, it's not being constantly presented with your failures is not you know, it's no path to freedom.
Poor Eddie Pinheiro, by the way. I'm rooting for Eddie Pinheiro, even though a lot of Bears fans were taking victory laps, calling us out for Kalen Kaler's pretty awesome piece on the Bears kicker search this offseason. It wasn't a good search. I'm sorry. It was a lot of bad ideas went into that search. They maybe stumbled upon a guy. The guy they actually wanted was Kare Vedvik at the end of that search, and they couldn't get him. Pinheiro was good for a little while, and we'll see how he bounces back from that, because some bad juju going on there.
Kare Vedvik is available right now if anybody wants him.
He is. They can get back on track with that search and bring Vedvik in. And oh boy, I'm praying for Eddie Pinheiro, though. He seems like a good dude, and hope he bounces back from that one. Colts Steelers. I had a lot of Steelers fans this week clamoring for Duck Hodges, which to me is insane. And I am not a Mason Rudolph guy. I mean, on Monday night, his mechanics were failing him. I don't know if that's a result of the monster hit he took in the Ravens game. And you know, he's a little bit, maybe a little bit gun shy at this point, but, he just kind of looked like a mess for most of that game.
Yeah, it was a tough game. But Pittsburgh is like in second place in the division right now. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And you have to go with upside. And while I understand the calls for Duck Hodges, I mean, I just think that Pittsburgh people, that Duck is just more of their speed. You know what I mean? Hunter, Duck caller. Just they see like the hero archetype in him, you know? Give Mason Rudolph a chance. I think he can throw a better deep ball. I think he can make more throws. If you have any chance of activating some of the best traits of your wide receivers, you're going to keep trying to make it work with Mason Rudolph.
Lions-Raiders, a little bit of credit to Derek Carr this season, who I was ready to give up on. He just seemed like a guy who could not wait to get the ball out of his hands on every play, no matter what the call, what the play design called for. He's making some second reaction plays this year that I did not think he had in them. And among other things, it's probably why the Raiders are relatively overachieving to this point.
That's true. You know, I think that I don't know if he's eventually the guy that John Gruden is going to want to keep there, but I think that he is still a quality starter, right? I think he's still in that top 15, 16 range. I don't think he's nearly as bad as maybe the Raiders' record over the past few years or his numbers compared to anybody else are going to indicate. I mean, that team's beat up too offensively, and he's accentuating what he has. I mean, he's making his tight end into a top 10 tight end, just kind of based on some of the throws that he's made. So, yeah, no, it's been an interesting season in Oakland. We'll see if they can stay alive here.
Bucks Seahawks here. This seems like a game where Jameis will get into maybe even more trouble than he has been getting into.
Is that possible?
This it's funny because I do think the Bucks can handle this Seahawks kind of let's call it an up and down pass rush and give Jameis some time, but it almost feels like giving Jameis time against a defense where they play a lot of zone, they'll have eyes on him. I just feel like this is a game where Jameis might try and fit like 7 ill-advised passes in there and like 4 of them get picked off.
Yeah, I mean, it could work out like the Rams game where all of a sudden you score 50 points and all these passes fall into your receiver's hands, or it could just be a typical Jameis game. And, you know, Seattle's defense is not living up to their kind of historical greatness this year. I do think they're going to get better as the season wears on. That's kind of something that they've always done well, but they rush the passer. They have the capability of rushing the passer, and like you said, they have smart enough guys on the back end where this could this could be hellish for Tampa Bay really quickly. Man.
Yeah. Browns Broncos here. This is where it starts to get easier for the Browns. The schedule really does lighten up here, and they do have a chance. You know, like I said, everyone in the AFC still has a shot here. Browns have been good offensively, and it sounds like it's going to be Brandon Allen under center for the Broncos. This is not a break for this Browns much maligned offensive line, though, because his Broncos pass rush is still really getting after it, even though they're without Bradley Chubb at this point.
Yeah, and this is really going to be an indictment on if the Browns lose this game, it's going to be a huge indictment on their inability to have acquired any sort of help on the pass rush front. I mean, you know, they could have gotten maybe Big V from the Eagles. I don't know if they tried, I'm sure they tried to get Trent Williams and that failed. But like, you know, this is reaching dire straits. Tensions are boiling over in Cleveland, and you know, this would be like a characteristic win ugly Broncos game that would just totally send Cleveland into the stratosphere, which would be really bad.
It has been a really fascinating case study and Freddie Kitchens was not a coordinator for long enough to say like great coordinator, maybe not so good a head coach. But if we are going to give him the benefit of the doubt and say he would have been a very good offensive coordinator, I mean, they are disorganized to the point where it's becoming embarrassing out there for him.
He's almost like Southern next gen Ben McAdoo.
Oh boy. That is a Halloween image for you right there. Let's wrap it up. Cowboys Giants. Man, I love the thought of Michael Bennett and DeMarcus Lawrence and a sort of rejuvenated Robert.
He's playing
Quinn.
So well. It's unbelievable.
It's going to be something. And look, the Giants have had plenty go wrong this year. The offensive line has been better. It's still not great, but they've been building this up. This is a really good test because this is a potential sort of meltdown matchup for a lot of offensive lines. If they can hold their own and sort of hang around in this one in their own building, you know, maybe some optimism going forward for Dave Gettleman's plan.
Yeah, I still think the Leonard Williams trade was one of the weirdest things that I've ever seen anybody do at the trade deadline, but I guess we'll get our first look at Leonard Williams. But yeah, back to Michael Bennett, I think that might have been the best trade of the deadline. I mean, like a late round pick, a guy that's going to give you rotational help. You already have two players that are playing well and that are capable of winning matchups against good, average to good offensive tackles. And then you add Bennett, who's... almost like, you know, just an agitator. I mean, a guy that's going to come in and is going to bother people up front, and he's going to take advantage of mistakes. And so, I don't know, I really like that move. I thought that was smart. I thought the Giants were going to do something, or the Cowboys were going to do something big, like a Leonard Williams or like a Vic Beasley, but this is way smarter, you know, unless historically you don't get a good return on your investment when you're taking players from the Patriots, but I think this is different. I think Michael Bennett's had enough of a sample size where we know what he's capable of.
I was going to say, I would rather have Michael Bennett than Vic Beasley right now in 2019. I mean, put him inside. You can do some games with DeMarcus Lawrence there if you want, or just have him attack. And now you have three disruptive guys on that pass rush on passing downs. And I'm sure Bennett won't be a full time player, but that's some scary stuff there.
Pray for Mr. Dimes.
Poor Danny. He was good last week. We'll see. This will be a good litmus test for that offense there. All right, Connor. It's a wrap. That's a wrap for that week 9 slate on our I guess it was a Halloween show. We should have played up the spookiness, I suppose.
You didn't even describe to anyone the costume that you're wearing right now, you know?
Yeah, I know. It's well,
Gary's dressed like Peach from Super Mario, and he didn't even tell me he was going to do it, and I
didn't want to freak anyone out though, because it is
it's also what he wears in the office.
It's an upsetting visual, me in the Peach costume. I'm actually. Do you dress up? Do you do the whole family thing?
We do. Last year, I complained about it, but it ended up working out really well. We were all Winnie the Pooh. Characters, and then I got the full zip up like poo thing, and it was super comfortable, especially since,
oh yeah,
you know, once the baby goes to bed and the trick-or-treaters come over, we just kind of drink and we hang out, and so you fall asleep in a costume like that and it just is great, you know. It's really comfortable. This year I'm gonna be Cookie Monster, kind of the same deal, you know.
That's good. I thought you were gonna say it was really hot, but I mean, hot temperature wise, or hot like you just look really good. But yeah, we're it's supposed to rain up here in the Northeast, so we'll see if that spoils things. We're Pokemon this year. Both my kids wanted to be Pikachu though, so we really, really half-assed it and just got them Pikachu sweatshirts, hoodies.
That's not a bad idea.
So, like,
though.
That's it. And yellow pants, that's about it. I'm going to be Ash Ketchum, and my my quite pregnant wife is going to be a Pokeball. So,
this could be an entirely different podcast, but I've never understood kids' fascination with Pikachu, and I love Pokemon. I still play it regularly. He's not the best Pokemon by any stretch of the imagination in any category. And so I don't know. I challenge people to just dig a little bit deeper, you know?
He's adorable. I'm a Psyduck guy myself. That's a good question, though.
Like, if Charizard's on the table, like, you know, he's number one. He's just so... Or Mewtwo, or, you know, any of these, the super overpowered Zapdos, any of your legendary birds... Oh man, this
Mewtwo is scary. My son is a big Ho-Oh fan.
Yeah, Ho-Oh is good. Yeah,
I wonder if there's something that it. So, have you ever heard like Conan talk about like the old Simpsons focus groups when they used to, you know, try and get people to tell them like, oh, what do you like about the show? And they kind of figured out that, like, people really react to the color yellow. It's just a very pleasing color for people to see. It's very bright and happy and stuff like that. So I wonder if that's Pikachu. He's got an adorable voice. He's a cute looking guy anyway. Maybe the yellow is playing in his favor here.
That's true. Yeah. I don't know. I just always he got his own version of the game. I mean, Red and Blue, the original Game Boy games, are so classic. And then there wasn't enough Pikachu, so we had a whole different thing that we had to do, and that was my first game for Game Boy, was Pokemon Yellow. But I don't know. This goes back to, these are my own issues, you know?
we've got to deep dive your Pikachu issues maybe on the next show, but...
What a weird end to this, by the way, that, like, we said we were done at, like, the whatever it's going to be, like, the 30-minute mark, and then someone looks down at their thing, and they're like, oh, there's still 10 minutes left. Just like, here's the thing I don't like about Pokemon.
This was the true sort of lightning round at the end, the 3-hour lightning round.
There you go.
Pokemon takes. This will officially wrap it. So if you don't want to listen to the credits, you can stop it now. But you might as well at this point. The MMQB NFL Deep Dive Podcast is Connor Orr and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Keep up with our entire line of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL Podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.